Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the June 13th meeting of the Historic Preservation Board. Just a quick announcement before we get started today. We do have a short board. We have currently have four members present, which is a quorum. We are expecting a fifth board member to join us shortly. In the meantime, with the four members present, we can get started with the early items on the agenda. Today, our vice chair, Ms. Laura Weinstein-Berman, will be our acting chairperson. With that, I think our first order of business would be the approval of the May 9th, 2023 minutes. Okay, moved by Mr. Breslin.
I'll second.
Seconded by Ms. Lovell. All those in favor? Okay, thank you. That passes. Before we get started with the other items, I'm going to turn it over to Nick Kalergis, who will read the notice regarding lobbyist registration, as well as swearing in any members of the public that will be testifying today.
Thank you, Debbie, and good morning, Madam Vice Chair, members of the board. Today's meeting of the Historic Preservation Board has been scheduled in a hybrid format, with members of the board physically present in the Commission Chamber at Miami Beach City Hall, and applicant staff and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 817-4834-7488#. Or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 817-4834-7488. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if they're participating by phone. Before I swear in the public, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And then lastly, I'd like to swear in any members of the public and any members of staff who will be testifying today. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. This morning we do have several requests for continuances. The first request is HPB 220561. This is 829 4th Street. We have been working with the applicant on design modifications to the project, as discussed at a previous meeting. And we have no objection to the request to a continuance to the September 12th meeting. See, the representative from the applicant is here. Emily, I don't know if you would like to address the board.
Good morning. No, just if you have any questions about the continuation request, I'm available.
Okay, before we vote on a motion, let me just open it up to the public. Are there any members of the public wishing to comment on this application in chambers or on Zoom? Seeing none, we can close the public hearing. And Mr. Breslin, was that a motion? Okay, do we have a second? Okay, all those in favor? Any opposed? Okay, that is continued to the September 12th meeting. Emily, let's do the next one, because that's you too, which is HPB 230572. This is 7801 Atlantic Way. This is also an application we continue to work with the applicant on, and I believe they are requesting a continuance to the July 11th meeting.
Correct.
And staff has no objection to that. If there are no questions for me, Emily, do you have anything?
Nothing additional. Thank you.
Okay. Let's open it up to the public. Any members on Zoom or in chambers wishing to comment, please raise your hand. Okay. We do have, let's see, one person on Zoom, Bonita Bona.
Good morning, Bonita. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. I'm Bonita Bona.
Bonita, we're receiving some feedback. If you have two devices open, could you please close one so we can hear you better?
Just do this right. I think I have it.
That's better.
All right. I just wanted to say I'm the property that you're talking about today, 7801, is directly across the street from me. I'm a homeowner here for 40 years now. I'm at 101 78th Street and Atlantic Way. My second floor has a beautiful ocean view me and my family enjoyed for 40 years, which will be totally gone if this is higher than what's existing. And we've been very cooperative. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes, we can hear you.
Okay, just checking. We've been very cooperative over all these years with the construction of these homes. And being the Historic Preservation Board, I don't know if that many of all of you or some of you are familiar with the only original ocean single family homes that were built in the early 1900s. There's one over here that's going to be 100 years old, but I always pictured it like a Vizcaya village, but instead they built these giant homes. And we used to open our homes when it was designated historical to welcome the board and the guests to tour our homes. And then since that time, everything has changed. It, what used to be a very private row, no one knew we were here, is now gated community. And it's hard to get our access with construction is probably going to be upset again, getting to the beach, getting to our driveways, which wasn't fun, but we cooperated with everything all the time. And then the noise, the dust, et cetera. But my main thing is my view. I'm disabled now, and it's nice to be able to look off my porch up there and see the view, the sunrise. So I just wanted to say that today. And I hope that you guys as board members look into these things when they come up, because I noticed these younger people today are very interested in historic landmarks, and too many of them are being destroyed. And I just wanted to say, it's not the things change, but it's not the same. And losing my oceanfront view, I'm upset. That's all. And you guys have a good day and come by and take a look one day if you haven't been here already. Is there anything you want to ask me?
Thank you, Bonita. No, the applicant will not be presenting the project today. This is simply a request for a continuance to the July 11th meeting. So if you are interested in the public hearing that discusses the project, I would recommend if the board continues it today to stay tuned at the July 11th meeting. Okay?
Question for you, Debbie. How full is the July 11th board meeting? Do we really have room to add anything more to it?
It's a full agenda. However, we have lost some. We've moved some of the July items due to technical deadlines and those types of things to the September meeting. Okay. So we're balancing it out. We do expect a heavy agenda and a full day on July 11th, but we're optimistic that we can get through.
Okay. The agenda. Thank you.
We have one more member of the public wishing to comment, and this is with regard to the continuance. So we're not hearing the merits of the application right now. We're hearing the request for continuance. Ashley Molina.
Good morning, Ashley. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Okay. I'm actually Benita Bona's daughter. I also live at 101 78th Street. I just wanted to quickly reiterate our concerns because we haven't really been given any details. We don't know where to find any details related to the project or what they plan to build. Number one, we're concerned about our right-of-way and the right-of-way of the public for beach access, as well as my mom mentioned from our second-story porch, we can see the ocean from where we are right now. So we're concerned about our view. We're concerned about the right-of-way, the way that 78th Street and Atlantic Way are set up. Once construction trucks start filling up, we're like blocked from entering our home. So we are very concerned about this, and we would like to know where we could get more details. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ashley. And the applicant is here today. She has heard your comments and will likely be reaching out to you.
Correct.
Okay, with that, we can close the public hearing. Do we have a motion? The request is for the July 11th continuance.
I'll move.
I'll second.
Ms. Lovell seconded. All those in favor? Any opposed? Okay. That application was continued to the July 11th meeting. The last request for continuance today is HPB 230566. This is 2740 North Bay Road. Again, we have been continuing to work with the applicant. We believe there may be a positive outcome and are no issues with the request to continue to the September 12th meeting. If you don't have any questions for me, the applicant's representative is here. Alfredo, would you like to address the board?
I'm here to Alfredo Gonzalez for the record on behalf of the property owner. We've asked for the continuance because we're also submitting another application for a modification and a new design of the house. So they'll both be before you in September. So that's why we've been working with staff on coming with a it's currently a vacant lot, so both applications could come at the same time to you in September. Answer any questions if you have.
Okay, if there's no questions, we can open it up to the public. Any members of the public wishing to comment on this request to continue the application, please raise your hand or come forward. Seeing none, we can close the public hearing, and I'm open to a motion. Okay. All those in favor? Okay.
Thank you.
Application is continued to September 12th. Thank you. Okay, that completes our request for continuances this morning. We do have our first regular application. I see the applicant is in the audience. This is HPB 230564, 1245 Michigan Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the introduction of a temporary daycare facility within Flamingo Park, located along Michigan Avenue. The board did review this project at their April 11th meeting and continued it to today with some clear direction given to the applicant. Just very briefly, the applicant has submitted revised plans. These plans do include some significant modifications, including breaking up that single volume of building into three distinct parts. So the massing and the volume of the building has been redistributed. Staff does believe that this It is a significant change in direct response to comments received by the board. This will also kind of create nicer spaces in terms of natural light entering into the classrooms. So we think that was a significant improvement. The design of the building has also been refined to reference traditional wood frame construction, including the introduction of horizontal siding and divided light windows. Staff is supportive of the proposed modifications, and we had some comments. We issued two recommendations as part of our staff analysis. The first was with the front porch area, was to extend the canopy, whether it would be to the along the north side of the property, wrapping around the north side, or just extending it past the building wall. So that was one recommendation. Our other recommendation was to reorient the stairs. Since our recommendation was published, we have been working with the applicant, who has done his best, and the city has done our best to respond to staff, the planning department's comments. One thing, and I believe they do have a revised rendering that shows their response to the staff's comments. One issue that did come up, however, was the question about reorienting the stair. After we met with the applicant, we were advised that there is a large ficus tree, that reorienting the stair could have a potential negative impact on those that root system, which is quite extensive. And so staff, you know, we just wanted to point out that our comment in no way was intended to potentially harm any of the existing shade canopy. You know, we understand that this is a temporary project, and you know, temporary means different things to different people. It's likely to be here for several years. However, the park is really the important component of this, and the ability to restore the park after the modular structure is removed. We hope that the tree will be there much longer than these modular structures, and we understand that any siting of the structure that would impact either the landscape of the park, that could be an irreversible impact, like harming the tree. We also don't want to impact, or we want to have the least amount of impact on the functionality of the park. So we really did talk with the applicant about the siting of the structure, and those are questions that the board had brought up. Could it be shifted? Could it be shifted toward Michigan Avenue was one of the comments. Again, we do believe that would have a long-term impact on the tree canopy that's currently there. We also believe that functionality-wise, this current location does have the minimum impact, so that when this modular structure is removed, it will be a relatively simple process to restore the original plan that was approved as part of the Flamingo Park Master Plan. It's also important to note that the proposed location will allow the city to move forward with the restoration of the lodge, which is, you know, very exciting, as well as the introduction of the butterfly garden. So if, you know, we had to look at all of those circumstances to make sure that we were having the least amount of impact on the long-term success of Flamingo Park. So it was really a balance of designing something that was temporary, but we understand, you know, it could be there for several years. So we wanted something that was attractive and that looked somewhat permanent, but that could be easily reversed in the future without harm to the park. So we are supportive. The applicant will be presenting the updated plans in response to staff's comment regarding the canopy. And with that, we are recommending approval subject to the conditions outlined in our draft recommendation. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have. If you don't have any questions, we can turn it over to Colette Satchel from Capital Improvement Projects and our design consultant. Any questions for me?
Good morning, everyone. In 2019, the city CIP came to HPB for a discussion item about construction at the South Shore Community Center. And one of the things that was clear is the request to make sure that we provide for the daycare as we move through with our plans. In every single public arena that we have presented the fire station project, that has been unanimous. Make sure that we take care of the babies and provide appropriate accommodations for them. To that extent, we even had a meeting with the FPNA back in 2020. Parks and Rec had a presentation to them, and there was a motion to temporarily locate the daycare within the park, and we've been moving forward with that, simultaneously looking for a permanent location. We have looked at the Barclay building. There was a feasibility study done to possibly locate them there. That was not an ideal location because it moves them out of the demographical area that they currently serve. We looked at the existing fire station building, the 1045 Jefferson building, and that wasn't appropriate because there's a sewer station behind that has to have access to heavy equipment at all times. You know, we need space for a playground. So this is not, and this building is 4 or 5 feet below the flood criteria. So that site, it was not ideal for the children as well. We've looked at a number of locations. If you could pull up the presentation, please. Second slide. We've looked at a number of locations within the park. Much to everybody's, you know, we've looked at the parking lots, the one to the north and the south of the park, and reducing parking in this area is not ideal because, of course, when the park is active, these parking lots are full when they have sporting events. We looked at an area to the north of the handball courts, that small square in the middle of the site. Not ideal. It's a little bit too remote, doesn't have much activity, and it almost seems like the back of house, kind of. So, you know, we then looked at the area west of the football field. And, of course, that's not ideal either because when they do have football activities, that area is overwhelmed with kids and tents and all of the activity. So the area that we've selected is the area to the north of the existing playground within the area that we reference as a butterfly garden. And that location was ideal because it's an open area that we could very easily get in and perform the construction. We've chosen a location, which we'll go back over again, that is minimally invasive to the park and for all the plans that the master plan has. As to the permanent location, there's an ongoing, another feasibility study to see how we can incorporate the daycare into the Flamingo Youth Center, which is funded by the Geobond Project. So this feasibility study looks to see how the daycare will fit within the required footprint. It looks to see what the cost is going to be for the daycare-associated construction so that we can, you know, decide if this is a good fit. They have to fit within the other programs there, which include the PAL and, of course, Parks and Recreation. So the area in the magenta is the area that is currently under that feasibility study. Talk a little bit about the existing daycare, because I know there is concern about that. The existing space is 2,500 square feet. They currently are licensed for 74 or 75 children, but they have 35. They have a waiting list for 200. The problem that they're having is staffing. So, you know, they can't take in more children unless they have sufficient staffing to accommodate the children. As such, you're going to go ahead and see a presentation by Matthew Pollock, but I wanted to talk about the different modular companies that we're looking at. We didn't want to just have trailers. People associate the metal construction trailers. That's not what we wanted. We wanted to have modular structures that we can custom design, add some lipstick to it so it looks appropriate, you know, so that it's endearing for the kids. It is a temporary location, but we want to make sure that for that temporary period that it is conducive to the children and their development. So we're looking at a few companies. Vesta Modular is one of them. Creative Modular is another one. And Advanced Modular. So we're actually looking at three, and we have proposals from all three that, based on today's results, you know, we can then go ahead and proceed. I'll let Matt go ahead and walk you through the revisions that we've made to the plans. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, Colette. My name is Matt Pollock. I'm president of Chisholm Architects. We're located on 752 Lejeune Road in Miami. I just wanted to walk through a similar presentation that we gave originally and to discuss the modifications that we made based on the feedback we received. The slide you see here is really a context slide of the adjacent residential buildings that are to the west of our site. What we attempted to do was to try to maintain the same scale and roof shapes of those adjacent facilities, sort of to complement the neighborhood. We obviously do have some issues with the flood requirements and having to bring it up to flood. But what we tried to do is maintain those low slope roofs and the scale of the buildings is give it a much more residential scale. The image you see here, it's a little blurry, but this is just an overview of the location. I don't know if there's a, if you can, oh yeah, good. Of the proposed site, you have the existing lodge building to the east, the proposed butterfly garden to the north, and then the proposed daycare facility just south of the butterfly garden and west of the lodge building. We working with both Colette as well as the design team for the butterfly garden and the lodge building. We tried to integrate our design. This is a flip of the site. So north is up. The butterfly garden is to the north. So what we did is try to integrate our design with both the butterfly garden and the lodge, so that we could provide connectivity with the walkways, both our walkways and then the linking up the future walkways to both the lodge building and the butterfly garden. I have a little bit more detailed site plan here. Let me just skip this one. So this here is sort of the extents of our project site. When we originally met back in, I believe, March, we had a rectangular building that was, you know, primarily located in this area here. It was 3,500 square feet. What we did is it consisted of a simple gable roof. We, taking the feedback we had gotten from the board back then, sort of discussion of having maybe a longer, more linear building on the site, we went back to the drawing board, kind of worked with some of the modular manufacturers that Colette referenced, and were able to sort of design the building take the modules, which in the original design were basically five modules of the same 50 by 70 feet, went ahead and redid the modules so that they could be oriented. So we have two modular buildings here consisting of the admin portion of it, two longer 60-foot modular buildings here, which consists of, gives us our classrooms and corridor spaces, and then two smaller modular buildings on this end here, and that allowed the building, and that gave us an opportunity to kind of shift the buildings and rotate the buildings so that we could get some variation on the elevation, so we didn't end up with a very long building and could create some reveals and some shadow lines within the building. And then our playground area is to the south. What we're basically doing is we're using our stairs as our entry into our building, and then the ramp acts as both accessibility, ADA accessibility into the facility, but it also acts as accessibility into the playground area as well. So it sort of serves double duty there. Let me see if I can go to the next slide. These were our slides. These are just our elevations. We are, you know, proposing a metal roof with a hardy board siding. Have samples of the hardy board siding that we're proposing. Renderings make the hardy board siding look a little grayer than what we're actually proposing. Selected hardy board because we don't have to paint it. It tends to hold up better as opposed to stucco when you are trying to, you know, to avoid cracking in those items there. And this gives you the output there. Do we have our AC unit is elevated and screened in the rear of the building? Just our typical section. If I can maybe take another minute just to kind of wrap it up. We worked, again, with staff and with the Butterfly Garden folks as well to select playground equipment that comes already covered so that it's, there's a built-in shade device to kind of limit the amount of permanent shade devices that we would have on the site to limit the lot coverage on that sense. We're using the same benches and trash receptacles and lighting at the Butterfly Garden, so there'll be cohesiveness among that. And then there's a sort of simpler, went with a more residential style railing for our building. This is the revised rendering where we extended the, after speaking with staff, once we received their recommendations, where we extended the canopy to the full, to the northern portion, so we get a little bit more shade and rain coverage from the beginning of the building. And like staff mentioned, there's an existing ficus tree here, which probably is much bigger than what we're probably rendering it to. So the concern was if we brought this stair out, this sidewalk would have to extend out farther, as with the canopy. And then we start getting into the not only the tree canopy, but the roof structure as well. Here's just an aerial shot of the building, and then a shot of a view from the south looking east. And with that, we're open for questions.
If we could get five more minutes, I'd like to cover a few other things, if that's okay.
We do have a short agenda, and I think the board had asked for a lot more of the background information.
Right.
So I don't have an objection to that. Is the board okay with that?
Okay. All right. So I wanted to make sure that we cover a lot of things. So he didn't talk about parking. I know there's a concern for parking. The code requirement for this use is 3 parking spaces, which we have taken a look at it, and during the hours of operation, the existing parking lot to the south can accommodate those 3 cars. Most of the employees are either from the neighborhood or they are coming by bus or by bike, so there is the anticipation that the 3 definitely will be sufficient. Drop-off sporadically occurs between 7 and 9. These are smaller kids based on the parents' schedules. If you could go back to the site plan, we do anticipate using the on-street parking that is located directly in front of the building for the drop-off. They are going to drop off and keep going. That area, we've taken a look at it. It tends to be vacant except for when they have activities at the park or during the night hours when people are home. So the drop-off, you know, is going to occur from Michigan Avenue and pick up as well from that area. I know where there is a concern about green space, and one of the reasons why we chose this location is because it's kind of nestled as much into the existing foliage as we could without affecting the trees. You know, so we're leaving the majority of the area north of the playground such that we can execute the Butterfly Gardens. The Butterfly Gardens is scheduled to start construction once the construction of this facility is done in early spring next year. Didn't want to install it now and then have this construction, you know, damage it further. The structure that we're proposing is 0.22% impervious area of the percent of the entire park. And once the facility is not in use anymore, it will be removed, and I believe that within 6 to 12 months we can easily restore the sod, you know, restore the landscape as was, you know, as necessary to restore it for public use. I also want to point out that this location does not affect the design of the Butterfly Gardens in terms of landscaping or trees. We are not reducing the number of trees that will be provided based using this design. I think we talked a little bit about the number of locations that we have looked at, and I focused mainly on city-owned facilities that we have looked at, but there's also other private properties that we've looked at as well. There's a property across the street, the 555 Jefferson Avenue property, that we thought we had a location, and that fell through. There's a concern that you know, of placing a daycare into the park, I think I've spoke to it before, that a park is an ideal place for a daycare, you know, where the children can connect to nature in a way that in an urban environment they typically don't get the chance to do. And this is an amazing park to be located in. We have other examples of facilities within the city that brings children here where they can really enjoy nature. We talked about the other projects. I want to make sure I address. In terms of drainage, there are existing drainage structures. There are three existing drainage structures within this area that will be adjusted as necessary as a part of this project to make sure that this does not flood the park any further. We talked about the... I think I have covered all of the previous concerns. If there's any other, of course, we're open for questions. Thank you.
Okay. Do the board members have any questions for the applicant? Okay.
You have a few questions. First, in the background part of the staff report, it said that the City Commission on September 14th, 2022, extended the lease agreement for the remaining tenants at the South Shore Community Center, including the Rainbow Intergenerational Child Care Center. When was it extended until? What's the end date of that lease?
Okay, let's get all the questions out. I see Colette is taking notes, and then we'll respond.
And then regarding, because I understand that they're going to be a tenant, the city's not going to run the daycare center, will the rent collected pay for the construction? And is there going to be a foundation for these temporary structures, or do they have to sit on a concrete pad or something? And you don't have to answer, I hope. And because we're calling them temporary, but sort of like tongue-in-cheek, temporary several years and we don't know how long. Who's been paying for the cost for the design, and where does it come from? I mean, because if I understand when the typical applicant is a private landowner usually, and so we want to be concerned that they're able to use their property. But here, the city's coming before us to put a commercial space for a commercial tenant in a city park. I'm wondering what expenses have been incurred so far, and where does it come from?
Okay, thank you. Any of the other board members have questions? Nope. Okay.
Okay. I believe, and I don't have the lease, but I believe it is a month-to-month lease that is... I believe it's a month-to-month lease. We have the operators of the daycare here. They can probably speak a little bit more towards the lease. The rents pay for construction. I don't believe that is the case because currently that's not the case. The rents don't pay. There's insignificant rent payments for this for the South Shore right now. Understand that the daycare is seen as an amenity for the community. And because it serves an area that we have previously determined, there's a need. The city has allocated, I think, $1.8 million for the construction of this project. So in terms of who's going to pay for the project, the funds for the design and the construction will come out of this allocation. Responding to your question about the foundations for the structure, yes, the Florida Building Code does require that we have a foundation sufficiently designed to tie down the building so that it doesn't overturn in case of a storm. So, yes, it will be designed with permanent foundations that will be removed once we remove the structure.
How much would that cost?
The foundations?
To remove the foundation once it's in the ground. It can be poured concrete, right?
Yes, sir. I don't have an estimate on the cost, but I can get that for you if necessary. And we would have to project it forward to a few years to see what that would be.
Okay. Thank you to the applicant. You can have a seat, and we will before we open the public hearing, do any of the board members have disclosures?
And this would be for any ex parte communication since the last meeting at which this application was discussed.
Mr. Ehrlich, do you have any disclosures since the last meeting for this project?
No.
Okay.
I do. I discussed the project with Dave McKinney.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll open up the public hearing. Anyone on Zoom, please raise your hand. Anyone in the audience, please come forward.
Good morning, everyone. Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. We support the project, subject to the staff recommendations regarding the updated design, which appears to have incorporated feedback from HPB members. To ensure that the structure's time in the park is temporary, we suggest that beginning 5 years after occupancy and annually thereafter, that the city return to the Historic Preservation Board to report on progress made to find a permanent home for the daycare center and the plan to restore the park to the green space. We do have one question, since other projects were mentioned in Flamingo Park as part of the master plan. Is there an update regarding the restoration of the lodge building as well? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Annie Benedetti. I am the program director for Rainbow Intergenerational Learning Center. And I'm here, obviously, to advocate for our great organization and for our program. Our program has been in business with a beach for over 30 years. 100% of our parents who attend our center work at Miami Beach. I can tell you that 85% of our families whose children attend our program either walk or ride bikes to our center. 88% of our children qualify for free or reduced meals. 65% of our parents work in the hotel or restaurant industry. And 60% of our staff live in the beach. Apart from that, we also partner with AARP and the Urban League because our organization also service seniors and they also do it in the beach as well in other different programs. We actually not only volunteer or work with AARP and Urban League, but we actually also employ seniors into our program, and we actually educate them as well. We've been recognized throughout the United States for the program that we do, so in a way we're kind of like social entrepreneurs in that we work with seniors and we work with the very young, which are the two most vulnerable generations of our society. As you all know, our industry has been hit very hard with COVID. So it's been a little bit stressful for us to find staff. The beach rental is also a burden for a lot of people. So the fact that we can provide inexpensive tuition for our parents is huge. We also work with the city, and we have the pre-K scholarship program that we are also a part of to help lessen that burden with our parents. I mean, in the end, the majority of our parents are the backbone to help the hotel and restaurant industry. That's what we're here for. We're here to provide services for them. We're open more than 10 hours a day to help them with that service. We have a sliding scale fee, which also we're the only private nonprofit organization that does that. Here, nobody else does that, to make sure that we can help the families lessen their burden as well. And on top of that, I keep hearing daycare, and it cringes. It should be childcare learning center, because that's actually what we do. I mean, people have realized now the importance of early childhood and the impact that we've had. And I ask you all to realize what we've done to this community and to take us into consideration to keep this partnership going. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Katerina. This is Nicole, my daughter. She graduated from Learning Center Rainbow last year. Sorry, I'm very nervous. I don't know why. And my youngest one, she just attended the school. I'm full-time working mom. I live on the beach. I've been a resident of Miami Beach for past 14 years. And this center is helping me to do all my hard work, to walk to the center, so and knowing that it might be close and move somewhere far away, it will be very hard for our family. And all I want to tell you also that now she's going to the school, she just moved to first grade, and half of her class, they're actually from Rainbow School. So it's also creating not only like daycare and helping families, obviously, but it's also creating community, Miami Beach community, that they're friends, they grow together, we know each other, we help each other. So you asking right question about the money and cost, but there is a big need. There is no other daycare around. There is one A to Z, but it's also waiting list. It's very, very hard. Like my daughter just now turned 2 years old, and luckily we were able to get to the Rainbow again. And the staff is caring, loving, always there. Like we are bilingual families, always try to find the way to talk to kids, like how to prepare them for the future life. So once again, I don't want to sound like a crazy mom, but we are creating future in this center. And I really, really ask you to consider everything. I understand it needs to be cost efficient, but there is a need. And you will really help the family, the community of Miami Beach, because we are losing, like all the families moving, either to the high rents, either there is no space for the kids in the daycares. They have to move somewhere, and we're just losing good and nice people. It's not only tourists. It's not only like restaurants and bars. It's also a great living space, like south of Fifth. We're close to them. Beautiful parks. Flamingo is the best park for their kids. And just thank you very much. Thank you.
Hello, I'm David McKinney. I live at 1020 Meridian Avenue in Miami Beach. And, you know, I will never be on a fireman's calendar. And and now it looks like I'm trying to move people out of daycare. As the director knows, because I've met with her, and as her previous her predecessor knows, because I wrote her early on and said if there was any harm to the daycare center, to let me know and I would stop. I've never received an email telling me to stop. So I'm continuing on. And I want to first address incomplete information from the city. It's misinformation. Khaled said the FPNA, their resolution, okayed the daycare center. It did if it could fit into the lodge. And the resolution was if it could, the lodge could be restored, then the daycare center could move in there without any effect of the park. There, Maria came back and said it would not fit. Then you know, if you've been on this board, there have been tons of resolutions from the neighborhood association saying that that they oppose any addition there to the park, which, by the way, is not in the city's master plan for the park. There, it is because the city has failed to plan adequately for the fire station. Now, also missing here, and the city has wanted you to forget it, are the senior program, where this board promised Eddie Sierra that there would be nothing would happen to the senior program. Have you heard from them? Has the commission? No. So, and finally, there, as Ms. Tackett said, the important component and the issue before you in terms of your responsibility to the city, is the historic preservation of their statute. It is the city needs to find a permanent daycare center, the place for the center. The commission has told them. It does not have to be in their park. It can stay where it is. That it serves there, but the city decided it wanted a fire station there. May I have more time, Madam Chair? So I ask you, in terms of your quasi-judicial responsibility, to act on it according to your responsibility, which is to evaluate the appropriateness of putting in their temporary structure into Flamingo Park. They're basically, they're reminding you that the historic preservation statutes call for the preservation of heritage. As I presented the last time, this green space goes back to Carl Fisher and the start of there. It was actually, when it was the first leased and then subsequently bought by the city, it was always supposed to be green space for recreation. That is its historic purpose. That is what you're supposed to to work on. And we all want the best for the daycare center. They are an important part of the Flamingo Park neighborhood. And throughout all of this, all the neighbors in Flamingo Park have said no harm should come from it. We also say, what happened to our senior programs? This is a mess of the city's own making. It is a failure in planning that you're now supposed to put a Band-Aid on. I ask you to tell the city to go back to the drawing board, let the daycare center and restore the senior programs to the community center, or find them a permanent space, and then you can talk about a new fire station. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in chambers? And then we'll finish in chambers, and then we'll go to Zoom.
Hi, my name is Selena Rodriguez, and I am one of the city employees that she says that uses a daycare. In order for me to grow, I applied for a full-time position, and I have heavily relied on the daycare because, you know, when you go into a full-time position, you got to give 9 to 5. I understand about green space and whatnot, but I feel like the park is a family-friendly place. We have after-school care. We have games going on. We have... I personally handle one of the senior programs. We have water aerobics. I personally teach it. So I feel like Flamingo Park Pool is a one-stop for everything. We have Boys and Girls Club. We have after-school care. And I feel like if we added the daycare, we would basically be reaching all the ages. You know, and without this program, I wouldn't have been able to grow into the position as a single mom. So it means a lot to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move to Zoom. I see Johan Moore.
Good morning, Johan. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Good morning, board members and staff. The neighborhood is as committed to the daycare center, the child care center, and its important social function as it is committed to the principle of preserving our park space, and as it is opposed to the principle of using our municipal, but especially our neighborhood's Central Park as a dumping ground for projects that come before us because the city has failed to properly sequence a major infrastructure project. The park is indeed, other than maybe for the 15% of parents who rely on public transportation and who will now be farther away from their bus routes, but the park is indeed likely an ideal location. And in fact, the proper sequence would be to ensure that the funds for the child care center to be built integrated with the new PAL center, which has to be funded separately. That's the proper sequence. Build a new PAL and child care center, then build the new fire station, if in fact the site remains the 6th Street site, or if we are so lucky that federal funds should come through for one of the redundant gas station sites on 5th Street. I want to finish by saying that while my committee, the Sustainability Committee, has declined to weigh in on this specific issue, it has expressed significant skepticism from an ecological point of view that even 12 months should qualify as temporary. And it has expressed a tentative view, we will come back to this subject in the committee, that such temporary structures should be preferentially located on, in my words, gray space rather than green space. So I want to remind us, the city made this problem, the commission made this problem. We are grateful to staff for all their efforts, but I don't think splitting up the one structure into three necessarily addresses the fundamental question that we don't want even 0.22% of our green space used for a temporary structure when temporary, as has been pointed out, may end up being 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years. And to not ignore the legal formalities here, I had email ex parte communications with one of the members of your board, and I will leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Johan. I see no other members of the public wishing to comment, so we can close the public hearing. And if the applicant has a rebuttal, we can turn it over to them.
Wanted to respond to a couple questions and comments. Matt asked for an update on the lodge project. The invitation to bid for contractors to perform the work is scheduled to be released within the next 2 months, with the construction typically starting about 3 to 4 months after we do receive the bids, successful bids. So I believe that towards the end of this year, very early next year, we should be breaking ground on the lodge project as well. The HPB and the City Commission has approved the South Shore demolition. They have funded the fire station number one project. They've also even approved the $1.8 million to fund this project. So we're really moving forward with what we believe is the best solution for this issue. We do need to move on with the fire station project. We have been working on this project for over 3 years. Oh, my goodness. I think, no, it's almost 4 years that we've been working on this project. But the need for a new fire station, and I hate to go back to this because, you know, I think everybody understands, but the need for a fire station was identified back in 2016, you know, that the facility is subpar. And I think we have to understand that this is done. We are moving forward. And we have made efforts, and I understand that there's a feeling that we have not done our jobs, but finding 7,000 square foot building to accommodate the daycare that we need for 75 children is very difficult in Miami Beach, whether private or public land. It's difficult. And we have to make sure that we take care of the children as we move forward. This temporary location is above the current accommodations that they have. We've made sure of that. We've provided storage and office spaces and showers and things that they currently don't have. We've made sure that we try to address that in the interim. I am sure that once we get into the permanent location, it will be superb, and we'll continue to make sure that they're taken care of, but we do need to move on with the fire station project. I know Johan had discussed possibly locating the parking lot, locating the trailers on the parking lot, and it's a harsh surface, number one, to place the children in, but it places the children very close to 11th Street. We like this other location because it's more secure. It's more of a controlled environment. But also, it would take up a footprint of almost 6,000 square feet of parking that is heavily used when they have, you know, permanently, you know, while they have games or activities ongoing. So this is why we still do believe, we've looked at the entire site to see the best location, and the one that we have is really the best location. I think I've addressed all of the questions that that exist. But if you have any others, I'm here. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay.
I have a couple questions for you. If you look at SD 3.1 on the drawings, this building looks to me like it's built on columns and not a cement slab in the ground, which I think is, you know, he was concerned about a cement slab in the ground. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with tree roots and all of that, that is more of a problem. But this clearly looks to me like it's on columns.
Yeah, it is.
Which will make it much easier.
Yes.
On the landscape.
Is there something, because I asked her if it's on a cement slab, she said yes. Now you say...
The building is on...
slabs, and they say on columns, they say yes. Okay, so what will be the foundation? What will be the footprint, actually?
I'm sorry. You asked me if it was foundation. There's different types of foundation. You didn't specifically say slab, but it's not on a slab. It's on... The whole building comes manufactured. And we are going to install pilings, probably, because the soil in Miami Beach tends to require that. And then we will have column-shaped footings that are built up that we can then elevate the building to the required flood elevation, and it'll be placed on these columns and tied to it. The crawl space will be concealed with panels, which I think you see in the elevation.
With the lattice.
So it is placed on columns that are designed for it.
Yeah.
No, it will be.
Yeah.
And my other question is, did you say that the land that it takes up is 0.22 of 1% of the park?
0.22%
okay.
Total of the park footprint.
That's all.
Yeah, I wrote down before you said 2.2%.
No, 0.22%. That's one of the reasons that we showed the overall site plan, so that you could get a context of the scale.
Thank you. So we're closing the public hearing, and we can open to board member discussion.
Okay. So I'm going to work my way backwards. First of all, I appreciate the stats offered by both the city and the operator on the population of the child care learning center. I changed my wording from daycare. You're welcome. So I appreciate that, because that was one of the things that I think we were missing. Obviously, anecdotally, we understood that it served the community, but really understanding the numbers and how that applies, not only for the benefit of us making our decision, but also for the benefit of the community members listening in. Working backwards, 0.22% of the park, I believe you gave that stat last time, but I asked specifically last time for the percentage of the green space that we were losing, so the passive space, not necessarily because, 0.22% of the park, but there's also a baseball field, a softball field, a soccer field, 17 tennis courts, a pool, those types of things that are active uses that are taking up space in the park, and this is one of the few leftover green spaces that we have. Okay, so that was one of the things that I asked for that I felt we didn't get today. Separate and apart from that, in the interest of full disclosure, when it was mentioned today about the FP&A resolution, I live in Flamingo Park. I'm active in the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association, although not over the last few months because I've been pretty busy. But I went to go look up the resolution. And I can say with a pretty high degree of certainty that I'm the one who put forward that resolution. That said, I want to introduce a couple caveats, and I think David McKinney covered a couple of those. One of the things that we listed in our letter to the city manager, I have the draft, but not the full version, available to me on my email, but that the project was very fluid. It did incorporate the lodge and additional temporary buildings. And that one of the things that we were very particular on, and this is what I went to go look for and then found out that I put it forth, was that there would be a sunset provision. I do think that MDPL put forward a suggestion of 5 years that they come back before the board. While that's not a sunset provision, I would like to see some sort of end date set on this, because I think for twofold. One, we owe it to the residents to restore their park. Period, end of story. If this goes forward, we owe it to the residents to restore their park. But number two, we owe it to the constituents and the participants at the Child Care Learning Center to make sure that we give them some sort of sense of permanence and a plan. And right now, they're on a month-to-month lease in the existing building that has been approved for demolition. There is a fire station that's been proposed to put, that has been approved and funded to go there. And they're on this month-to-month lease. I mean, I can't imagine a business operating on a month-to-month lease, not only just a business, but a community service, knowing that tomorrow we may have to pack up and leave. And I don't think it's going to be that sudden, but I think we owe them some sense of continuity and understanding of where they're going to be and when. And I think putting some sort of cap of some sort, or at the very least a requirement to come back before us, if we cannot get a sunset provision, that gives some sort of sense of urgency and planning, so that perhaps in 5 years we're not here again saying, well, we didn't set up the critical path for this correctly, the sequencing was not correctly set up, and we're not prepared for this. So those are my comments that I had about the presentation today. I think I've said before that I'm generally in favor of this, not because I think that it's, well, is it appropriate to put this use in a park and falling under the criteria that we have to look at? I don't know that it falls outside of the criteria that we have to look at, unfortunately. So from that perspective, I don't know that sitting here, we can say that this is not appropriate for the space. That said, as a resident, I feel the need that we need to maintain our park space as park space, and looking at this as temporary with an end date is very important to me personally, and I think to the community as whole, and quite frankly, I think to the Child Care Learning Center. And I want to say one more thing, and I don't discount the fact that this is a park is a great space for a Child Care Learning Center, but a Child Care Learning Center in a park may not be the greatest thing for the residents that utilize that park, if that makes sense to everyone. So I just want to emphasize that. But I really thank you for the presentation made and the heartfelt perspectives offered today.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Lindsay. I mean, I appreciate your comment and agree with you that, well, we owe it to the residents to make sure that it's temporary, because you have a sense that it's giving away public space in a public park for private business. Private business certainly has benefit to the community. There are many businesses in the community that have benefit to the community. And I think it's probably a good thing that the city is standing up for this child learning center for the community. However, I've always had a great love for parks. And for me, it's sort of like an ethical issue. Like, this sort of gives me a queasy feeling, giving away green space in a park for private business. I'm a parent. My child went to a child learning center. But it didn't have a city that hired an architect to give away public green space for that child center. This is a very lucky child learning care center business. It really is, to have this city to going to bat for them like that, okay? And I was asking about the cost, just because, you know, the city's going to be the landlord. Usually a landlord is looking at the cost, but that's not really my... I live here in the city, and I want the city to spend its money properly, okay? But I'm a member of the Historic Preservation Board, and this park is a historic part of the Flamingo Park neighborhood, as well as the green space. And I agree, parks serve children for summer camp and for swim lessons and tennis lessons. And I really appreciated Mr. Moore's comment that there is a funding in place for a renovation of the PAL Center. Seems to me that that PAL center that already serves kids already has child programming there. He's right. This should be part of that whole center over there where they already have child aftercare program. Giving away precious green space in a park is an awful precedent. What if the school one day had limited space? Are we going to put temporary shelters in parks to give more school space? I think that, and I'm really disappointed, even though I have great friends at the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association and MDPL, to sort of like not stand up for the green space in a park. It just seems to me that we've heard a lot of great like salesmanship here. What a great service it provides. What a great need it is. And well, there was a request that was so unanimous in the city that was heard that we have to provide for the daycare. But where is that overwhelming voice here now? I hear the applicant and the city. And I hear people who represent community organizations that are sort of like, well, we don't like it, but we're willing to say yes so long as it's temporary. But the city itself doesn't know how temporary. And even 5 years, even if we sunset it at 5 years, there's going to be different board members here. Somebody else might approve to lengthen it. I think it's and to say that we're slowing down now the renovation of the other projects, the lodge, or this just is a bad use of public park space. It's not good for the neighborhood or the park. When you go to a park, I mean, I don't play handball, but I'm glad that the handball is there for people. It's available for free. The tennis, the swimming, everything is available for the pub. Anybody could use it. But the daycare, you have to be one of the people who got your kids in. They've got limited seats. It's totally private. It's not a public amenity. It's a private amenity. It's great. Public benefit, I'm starting to repeat, but I'm not willing to give away public park green space for it.
We absolutely do have to relocate this. It's 0.22% of the park. It's a temporary structure. I liked MDPL's 5-year check on it, and I think if we turned around and as a board and say the maximum amount of time that we're going to allow this structure to be there and we set it today, then, you know, I suppose it could change in the future, but it puts the city on notice. And we might say temporary structure has to come down in 10 years. If you didn't find something else by then, sorry. And it seems to me that the city is really working hard to find another location, and once they have that location, then everybody could breathe a little easier, saying, "Okay, we know it's permanently going to go here," and we just have to wait for that to be built out. But the fire station—remember, we had all this problem with the fire station. Where is it going to go? If the fire station is held up, and all of a sudden we have a fire in one of the high-rise buildings that we can't take care of, all of these people that might be saying, oh, no, I don't want a new fire station, and somebody dies, something gets burnt down. We are holding up a project that needs to get going. And this project, I think, has been done exceptionally well, and it should be approved.
Just really quick, where he's asking about for an alternative, I want to offer an alternative. Everybody's dying for an alternative. The historic City Hall building. We mentioned in a prior meeting, you gave as an example about a tenant where Rudy's used to be a restaurant there, and they have a big outdoor terrace area. It's a large space. It has a large outdoor terrace area where there could be a playground back there. I think that would be a great place for a daycare center in the historic City Hall building.
So you'd
on the
say
south side.
But right next to the police station?
Yeah, right next to the police station. And the other side of the ground floor is the Cinematheque or O Cinema.
So you're saying get rid of the Miami Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce out of that building?
No, they would. If
that's the space they're
they
in.
We could find them another space. The city could stand up and go to bat for them, but their needs are different than the daycare, than the child care center's needs.
I'm happy to read this
okay.
aloud. David McKinney said the resolution of FPNA was authored by Monica Salinas, and it was about the lodge restoration. So maybe I didn't put it forth. I just know that I have the draft of it. I wanted to comment on a couple of things, just because I think it is very important. Being appointed officials and sitting up here on this dais, we have a position of authority. And I want to clarify a few things and make sure that we are all aware. Number one, I think anecdotally it is unfair of us to expect the parents of the population that we have described to be here during this meeting. Quite frankly, if I wasn't in the position that I was in my firm, I wouldn't be able to sit here at this meeting or come and attend this, right? And so to expect people who are working individuals who may work at night or may work 9 to 5, who cannot take time off to come and be before this board at this meeting, I think that's disingenuous to expect them to be here, number one.
Well, we have Zoom and letters, too.
Number two, I do think that they feel that their positions are accurately and appropriately represented by the people who are here in front of us, and so I just want to point that out. Number two, I'd like to point out the Department of Labor in January of this year did a survey showing that childcare remains out of financial reach for many families, and that is not only applicable in the United States, is especially applicable here in Miami Beach. And I think the fact that we talked about some of the federal funding that is received by this daycare, the sliding scale, et cetera, there is an important public benefit that is provided by this daycare. And that doesn't negate the other things that we're discussing, but I want to make sure that we as a board recognize and realize how expensive it is to put a child, and I'm going to call it childcare for the time being, just to have your child taken care of during the day while you're at work. I do not have children, but I'm well aware of this difficulty, and I want to make sure that we as a board acknowledge and appreciate that in our decision making. And that was my final follow-up comment. Thank you.
Thank you so much for everyone being here. I mean, as far as the aesthetics, I was not at the April meeting, but I do think the massing looks much more dynamic. You described a rectangular box, so I do appreciate that update. And I do think it is well thought out as far as the planning goes. And I really appreciate, you all being here today. I know it is difficult to make time to come here. I really did also appreciate MDPL's recommendation. I need legal advice on this, but I would recommend perhaps in like 2.5 years to have some sort of update, and then if it would be feasible to have a sunset in 5 years and make sure that there is certainty that gets restored to a park. It sounds like a lot of the other board members, if I'm hearing right, with some exception, that would be an acceptable alternative, because we just don't want to have a gap in these essential services, I think, in the community. Would that be feasible?
I think you have broad discretion on requiring progress reports. And I think if you want to require one, 2.5 years from, are you thinking from approval or from
today, if it gets approved
from today's meeting date? Okay. Debbie, do you know if the structure will require a building permit under the building code? It will.
Yes.
Okay.
So a building permit will need to be issued by the city for the construction.
Okay. So that's one question is it could be 2.5 years from today. It could also be 2.5 years from,
The reason for today is because it's supposed to be a temporary structure. So if it does get approved today, they can move forward, but they can also move forward with planning for in 5 years where that permanent structure would go. I think that would be my preference.
I think the board can do that. My concern with imposing a hard sunset for the removal of the structure is that since these are permitted under the building code, once a certificate of occupancy is issued under the building code, the board doesn't have the authority to revoke that. So I think, if that's something that the board is seriously interested in, I think we should hear from staff about from staff as the applicant, what their position is. But I think your authority to do that is limited if you have it at all.
Quick question too, because I hear not as much during the press, but that we're trying to make sure there's no gap in service. How long will it take till the construction is complete and they're ready to have the child care move in?
I don't have that answer. If you would like to hear from the city staff, they would likely have that answer. Would you, Mr. Reed, would you like to hear their response?
Well, that's why I asked the question, because I'd like to know.
No, it's a good question. Maria?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for listening to this item. I'm Maria Hernandez, and I'm the director of the Geo Bond Program. If your question, Mr. Reed, is regarding the future daycare, the idea here is exactly to do what your concern is, which is not to have a gap. That's why we have to go in these separate steps. The first step is to build the daycare in the temporary location, which, by the way, has to meet the current code, which the old daycare does not have. The old daycare is based on an old code that is grandfathered in to that old building. In this temporary space, the children are going to be with the new code, which is more square feet per child and other requirements. The daycare gets completed. We move them into that temporary daycare. We then build the fire station in the existing building. Concurrently with that, the GeoBond program has $15 million for the reconstruction of the Powell facility, which is the Flamingo Park Youth Center. That is in the parking lot, as everybody knows. Our intent for the moment is to leave them functioning and build a brand new building next to them in that parking lot. Our intent is to put the future child care center inside that building. It will require some additional funding from, of course, from the commission, but it would be a less expensive option because we're going to be able to share a lot of the existing utilities and some of the plumbing and electrical and things of that nature, but they'll have their own entrance, their own exit, because, infants to five have to be completely separate from the kids that use the existing Powell facility. And then after that building is complete and the kids move in there, the temporary location gets torn down. That could take 5 years. The Powell facility is obviously coming in front of you because that is in a historic district. So you will know what the process is because we're going to have to come back to you with that anyway. So I hope that clarifies. Thank you.
Almost. So if, let's say, this board today approves it,
yes.
When would the facility be ready for the business to move in?
The temporary facility or the permanent facility?
We're here reviewing the temporary facility.
Okay, the temporary
today.
Facility. David, I believe you all have a schedule that would complete the work in the spring of 2024. February of 2024.
So it's like, instant building, just to add water.
Well, it's a temporary structure. We have to bring in plumbing and electric, so those utilities have to come in. So it's permanent, but it's temporary. But it isn't, a building that isn't, structurally sound. It has to be. So it takes a little bit of time, but it's a lot faster than building a building. No question about it.
Thank you, Maria. Lindsay, do you have a...
So building off the chair's comment, I like the idea of having them coming back sooner. I'm all for that, to come back before us. Because we are restricted on our ability on imposing any sort of sunset, I would like to see... I would like to have them come back before us at the time it is open back up, and let's get kind of a progress report at that point. And then I would like to see them every 18 months or 2 years from then on, looking towards, with the intention that we are looking to get this in and out as fast as possible. I guess we can only express an intent and impose those types of conditions. As much as we might like to impose a hard and fast, quite frankly, I don't think that's practical, because even if we were able to impose a hard and fast rule, that could always be changed by someone later if we were able to do so. So I would be open to something like that. I don't know about my fellow board members.
Are you making motion then?
I can. Okay. So then I would move that we approve the certificate of appropriateness with conditions as specified by staff, with the additional condition that we get a progress report, I'll say February and the time of opening. So if it's not ready by February, if it's not open back up by February, I want to hear back from you in February to find out where we are. And then also at the time of opening, and then every 18 months thereafter.
Instead of opening, can we put issuance of a certificate of occupancy?
That is perfectly
that
fine.
That is more clear.
Thank you. Much more clear.
Okay. And every 18 months thereafter, progress report. And I just have a couple amendments based on the latest design that we saw today. I would suggest that we modify condition C1. 1A, which is that the proposed entrance canopy shall be extended to the north of the building wall. So we're just going to, I'm recommending modifying that, not to, doesn't need to wrap around. And then I would recommend that the entry stair condition, which is 1B, be removed. And that would be consistent with the renderings that we saw today. Do you accept those?
I do accept those amendments.
Okay, thank you. So that is a motion. Do we have a second? Second,
I'll second.
By Mr. Breslin. Let me call the roll. Mr. Reed?
No.
Mr. Ehrlich?
Yes.
Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Okay, that passes, and we will see you in February. Okay, yes, thank you all for attending. Let's move on to the next application. It's very simple, straightforward application, at least. This is HPB 230573, 239 First Street. An application has been filed requesting variances from the minimum and average unit sizes. This particular building is a contributing building, constructed in 1936, and it is in the south of 5th neighborhood in the CPS 1, which is a commercial zoning district. This particular application is limited to variances, and the applicant approached us with their architect several months ago regarding a building permit to restore the building, as well as some significant exterior restoration. But most importantly, their concern was to upgrade the life and safety and accessibility of the building, which can often be challenging in these historic buildings. And so we took a look at the plans, which we support in terms of, you know, the architecture and the restoration project. However, we did note that as a result of, for example, introducing an elevator into the structure, and increasing the stair to meet the fire code, that resulted in the need to reconfigure some of the units, not all of the units. They're actually, as part of this, proposing to remove a unit. So they're reducing the number of units to try to accommodate that. Even with reducing the unit, in order for these, you know, life safety and accessibility requirements, they still end up with some undersized units. Not all of them. The current building has 12 apartments. They're proposed as 11 apartments. And five of those units, five of the 11 that need to be reconfigured, are going to drop below 400 square feet, which is the current required. So the two variances that the applicant is currently requesting is, one, the variance to reduce by up to 69 square feet. So not all of them will be reduced by 69 square feet, but the maximum reduction is 69 square feet from the minimum apartment unit size, in order to provide apartment unit sizes, the smallest being 331 square feet. The second variance is to reduce by up to 156 square feet the minimum average required apartment unit size of 550 square feet. The average is triggered because some of the units are being reconfigured. Currently, the building is non-conforming as to the average unit size. So that is not going to be changing, but the fact that they're reconfiguring the units, and some of the units will have ADA bathroom fixtures and that type of thing, so the partition walls will be slightly shifted, does trigger that need for the variance. Now, this was reviewed and analyzed by staff prior to June 1st. On June 1st, the city adopted the Miami Beach Resiliency Code. That includes a provision which could remove the need for that average unit size variance, provided that the applicant provided a covenant as part of that, saying that the it would be voluntary, that no residential units shall be leased or rented for a period of 6 months and 1 day. So potentially that variance, which would prohibit short-term rentals, basically, of the units, could be removed if the applicant agrees. Again, we met with the applicant and we analyzed our the project prior to that adoption. But based on the fact that they're actually seeing a reduction in density of the units, the fact that they are upgrading to fire safety and accessibility, the building currently does not have an elevator or any vertical accessibility, given the fact that it's a historic building and we need to be very careful in terms of partitions lining up with windows, we do see a significant need for this, what is a very minimal variance for five of the 11 units, which are currently non-conforming, so they're basically just asking to retain the non-conformity for this. But we do think that the fire and life safety and accessibility codes do represent a true hardship for these contributing buildings that can't necessarily be torn down and built new up to all the code requirements. Trying to fit everything in the existing footprint is exceedingly challenging, and of course we do want all of our buildings to be safe and accessible by people with disabilities. So we are very supportive of the request. I'm available for any questions, if the board members have any questions. If not, I see the applicant is in the audience for their presentation.
I'm also on Zoom, too.
And I think the property owner is on Zoom. Maurizio?
Should we connect to that property owner so I can swear them in?
Yeah, Maurizio, can you raise your hand? Let's see, I saw the hand go up and go back down. Maurizio, are you here to be sworn in?
And Graziano?
I don't know. If you are the applicant for this application, which is 239 First Street, please raise your hand on Zoom by...
If they're participating by phone, it's star 9.
Okay. I see a hand raised. Hello?
Hello. Yes, we are both here, Maurizio and Graziano.
Hi, Maurizio and Graziano. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Okay, do you wish to give a presentation?
Well, we are supporting of the staff recommendation, and as you say, described much better than me. We are trying to improve the building, in particular on the light safety. I didn't mention, I don't know if that our architect can describe better. We also add in the sprinkler system that currently the building doesn't have. So we do a bunch of improvement to the building. And honestly, personally, I was not aware that some of the units were not even legal since they're being built. So, and now with the reduction, with the introduction of the elevator, some other gets shifted below the 400 square foot. So I hope the board will understand and accept that.
Okay.
For some better specific question, Robert John, our architect, is in the room and probably can tell you better than me if there is any question on that.
Okay, thank you. Do the board members have questions for either the applicant or the architect?
Have they said what their rental situation is? I mean, are you going to be renting 6 months in a day and longer, or were you planning to do transient rental?
We don't know at this point, also because currently, a bit up to now, it was a long-term lease. Doing the major investment, if you are able, we will do a transient rental. But all depends if the city will allow.
I have a question for the applicant. Can you explain, since this is a request for a variance, and section 118-353 of the city code is, the title is variance applications. There are eight criteria where it says in part D, in order to authorize any variance, the applicable board shall find that, and then it lists eight different criteria. Can you explain why this application satisfies the criteria in the code for us to approve a variance?
And I don't have that in front of me. But as Debbie was also saying, because the reason that we're coming in front of you for a variance is if we were to remodel each of these units by themselves as individual permits, it would not have triggered the ruling that as a major renovation, you need to now look at these certain things. So that is, we're doing it as a major renovation. We're doing all the work together. So that's what triggered them to actually look. Correct. So because this was an existing, what they would consider like a non-conforming existing condition, that we're just keeping the same condition. We're not creating the condition. It's just something that has existed since, the late 30s when the building was built. So that is why, we do feel that, we're not creating this situation, it's an existing condition. That's why, we personally feel that this is a legitimate request for a variance.
And Robert, I'm sorry to interrupt, and Mr. Reed, on page 2 of the letter that's included in your package dated March 16th, I think you do have individual responses, correct?
We did, yes. I just don't have that in front of me.
You don't have it. You can, if you would like.
Oh, sure.
You can. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the special conditions and circumstances that that did not result from the actions of the applicant, since this building was built in 1936 and rehabilitation proposed does not increase the number of units, the granting the variance requested will not confer on the applicant any special privilege that is denied by these land development regulations to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. And again, our apartments will not confer any special privilege that is denied these other buildings in the district. A reduction in the amount of units is proposed to allow the space for existing accessible improvement. So, you know, we're not increasing it. We're actually reducing our density, which was also noted. The literal interpretation of the provisions of these land development regulations would deprive applicant rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district under the terms of these land development regulations. This is an adaptation rehabilitation and upgrade to the existing apartment units. We are bound by these certain obstacles and are doing the best to fit within the existing demising walls of the existing units. We have eliminated one unit to accommodate the stair and elevator shaft. We would not want to lose more apartments units when laying out a very similar to the existing size and scale that was built. The variance granted is the minimum variance that will make possible the reasonable use of the land. Again, the minimum modifications of the units. We are not modifying the unit sizes only when were necessary and are not reducing the existing minimum size of or unit count. The granting of the variance will be in harmony with the general intent and purpose of these land development regulations. And again, it's an existing residential and commercial building, and it's in compliance with the future land use. The granting of this variance will be in harmony with the general intent, and the variance may not use related, but rather for unit size, which is in keeping with the historic unit size. The granting of this request is consistent with the comprehensive plan and does not reduce the level of service as set forth in the plan. The existing residential commercial use is consistent with the future land use map and the comprehensive plan. And lastly, the granting of the variance will result in a structure and site that complies with the sea level rise and resiliency review criteria, Chapter 113, Article 2, as applicable. So we did address.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay, if there are no additional questions for the applicant, I can open the public hearing. Any members of the public on Zoom or in chambers, please raise your hand or come forward.
And just before we hear from our first speaker, do any board members have any disclosures to make on this application? Okay.
Good morning. Good morning, Matthew Galtanoff with the Miami Zion Preservation League. We're supportive of the variances. We are intrigued by the opportunity that the updated resiliency code offers, and Debbie explained it to us earlier, so thank you, and we look forward to seeing this building renovated. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have one member of the public on Zoom, Darlene Foster.
Good morning, Darlene. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
I'm the building owner immediately next door at 233 First Street in South Beach. I'm curious, are we removing the variance for transient accommodation versus the 6 month plus a day long term requirements? So is this a variance being requested to allow transient accommodation under 6 months?
Okay, thank you, Darlene. I can respond to that. Again, this property is located in the CPS 1 zoning district that allows, as of right, transient use or hotel use. So no variance is required for the use. Any members of the public additional? Today, I don't see anyone in chambers, and I see no one on Zoom, so we can close the public hearing and open it up to board discussion.
Okay. Thank you. No, I've, you're Mr. Grabowski? Yes. Okay. Well, thank you. My concern was that when somebody comes before the board to ask for a variance, the law is clear of what the board has to find, and if we have to find it, you got to give it to us to be able to find it. So, but your application does include the information and the explanation, the argument, in order to support the request for a variance, which I think is important if we're going to approve it. So that was just my concern, because as somebody pointed out earlier, we are a quasi-judicial board. We're not only like making decisions that we think are nice decisions or agreeing to nice designs, but sometimes we just have to uphold the law. And so that I have one recommendation to the city staff is that we ought to revise the order then, where if we're required to make findings, the order should state the board found that. Because how could an order approving a variance not even say that the board made the findings necessary to support the variance? The order just says that the board approved the variance. I don't think that's legally sufficient. Since we're required to make findings.
We do have form. We have a standard term on, let's see, the bottom of page one and top of page two of the order, that the board finds that the applicant has submitted plans and documents that satisfy Article 1, Section 2 of the related special acts, allowing the granting of the variance, and then separately, that the applicant has submitted plans and documents with the application that that indicate the following, and then the variance criteria is listed. So if the board were to approve these variances, then the order would reflect your finding that the criteria was satisfied.
Well, then I think it ought to just specifically say the board found that. The applicant submitted plans and documents that indicate the following, and the board found that. Because the code doesn't say that the applicant has to submit plans that indicate. It says the board has to make findings. So the order should say the board made those findings. So I would approve, I move to approve the request for the variance with the condition that the order is modified to reflect that the board made the findings required to support the approval.
Okay, I don't have any objection to including that. Mm-hmm. That's a good suggestion. Okay, so that's a motion. Do we have a second?
We haven't had rest of board comments.
Oh.
Oh, ha ha. Sorry.
I'm glad you made a motion. I just wanted to bring up the fact that my husband and I own several units at the Mantell Plaza. The largest unit in that building is 340 square feet. The smallest is 235, average 285. It's always full. There's a lot of long-term tenants there. Some of them have been there as much as 15 years. So whenever anybody talks about substandard size housing, there's a lot of reason for people to want to live in a smaller space, and it usually has to do with location. Thank you.
I had a question for staff, and it's probably because I was looking up the code to make sure that I was right before I asked it when you offered. You noted in your staff comment that as of June 1st, the resiliency code would waive the minimum average size requirement, but that doesn't waive the minimum unit size requirement, which they would fall below, correct?
For some of the units.
The 339 or 333 would fall below.
No, these are residential units, so 400 is the minimum.
Right, but they have units that are 332, 333, something like that.
Right, 5 of the 11 units are smaller than the 400.
Okay, so they wouldn't... The resiliency code wouldn't grant them the relief they're seeking, even if they chose to go that route and waive their ability to do short term. Okay,
correct.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? We do have a motion. We don't have a second to that. Well, hey, you can make a motion anytime you want. But it does need a second if we want to vote. Okay, let me call the roll. Mr. Ehrlich?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Okay. It's approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And board members, that concludes our regular agenda. I did receive a request from the city clerk to advise you, let me see if I can find it, regarding the, I believe you were all sent an email regarding a source of income and city affiliations requirement that needs to be submitted to the city clerk. And I just want to remind you, if you haven't done so already, please respond. They sent you a PDF, a fillable PDF. Just please respond with that information to the city clerk.
I believe our email came from Kayla, if anybody's looking for it.
Or if anyone needs it to be resent, you can let me know, and I will resend it to you. But that is all I had for today. So that concludes our agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. How did I forget? Because this is our application, I guess I apologize. I'm getting too antsy to get out of here. Wishful thinking, right? No, but this is a really great, really great. I'm very excited about this application. This is HPB 220537. This is the designation of the Collins Canal as a historic structure. So the board, what was it, in 2022, and I apologize for the length of this, but hopefully you'll understand why this type of request takes so long if you've read our designation report. When the board initially approached staff to begin the process of historic designation of this, you know, I will say that in my mind, I thought, well, so much of it is already part of local historic districts. Is this really necessary? But I really wanted to thank you as a whole board, because it was a unanimous decision of directing staff to do this, because we were able to really dive in deep and perform a lot of research. We were surprised by how much we found. It was a tedious process, but both of us, Jake Cyberlane and myself, really learned so much. We even found an article from 1912 in the Miami Herald during the initial construction phase that really sets the stage and the environment for how exceptional and incredible this feat was, and ultimately how important it was to the development of the city. This is the oldest structure, man-made structure that we have in the city. So it's an incredible history. Jake Cyberlane from our office did an outstanding job in putting this all together. I hope you appreciate a lot of the historic images that we found. Jake's going to walk you through all of his work. And with that, we are recommending a positive recommendation. So this is different from a lot of other types of certificate of appropriateness applications, for example. The historic designation process starts with this board in terms of the preliminary evaluation, and then today's hearing, which is the review of the historic designation report. But the process is slightly different, as the next step would be to have the planning board review this proposed designation, and ultimately the planning board is required to issue a recommendation as well to the city commission, and then it's the city commission's decision whether or not to designate this as an individual historic site within the city. So today we are supportive of the historic designation, and we are recommending that this board issue a favorable recommendation to the planning board and mayor and city commission for the adoption of this historic structure. And if you don't have any technical questions for me, I'll turn it over to Jake to go through the more interesting part of our presentation.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jake Cyberling with the Planning Department, and I'm presenting the designation report for the Collins Canal Historic Structure. If we could have the presentation on the screen. The proposed boundaries of the historic structure include that portion of Collins Canal from Biscayne Bay on the west to Lake Pancoast on the east, and does not include the seawalls or similar structures or bridges. Miami Beach was initially developed in 1883 as part of a coastal coconut plantation that was planted from Key Biscayne to Jupiter. By 1886, over 300,000 coconuts were planted, and it was at this point John Collins invested $5,000 in the project. However, shortly after, the plantation failed. In 1896, Collins traveled to Miami to investigate the failed project. He eventually acquired all the property from today's 14th to 67th streets. He later established an avocado farm. The farm was a success, producing avocados, mangoes, and grapefruit. However, transporting the fruit to the mainland was a tedious process. The produce was brought overland to the western edge of the island, where it was barged up a 7-mile loop around the shallows of Biscayne Bay to Miami. In 1911, to move crops more easily to market, Collins decided to build a canal. The canal was cut from a grass-covered pond on the southern edge of Lake Pancoast, southwest to Biscayne Bay. The completion of the canal not only afforded transportation of Collins' agricultural produce, but also allowed landfill and building materials to be brought by barge into the center of the island. As the canal was nearing completion in 1912, Collins began construction of a 2.5-mile long wooden bridge across Biscayne Bay from the mainland to Belle Isle. The bridge was finished in 1913 with the financial aid of Carl Fisher. The fill from Collins Canal was used to create Dade Boulevard, making the last connection from the mainland to Collins' newly platted subdivision along the ocean. And in this image, you can see, and highlighted in red, is the Collins Canal, and it's noted as under construction. This is the plat map from the Miami Beach Improvement Company subdivision in 1912, and it was the second subdivision in Miami Beach. This is the other portion of the plat map, and you can see Collins's farm shown, and you can also see Pine Tree Drive, and there's little pine trees actually drawn in. Today, the approximately 1.2-mile-long canal is primarily used for recreation and is crossed by 7 vehicular bridges and 2 pedestrian bridges. The Collins Canal, completed in 1912, survives as the oldest man-made structure in Miami Beach and serves as a reminder of the extraordinary history of the city. Staff finds that the Collins Canal, a historic structure, satisfies 3 of the 8 designation criteria, and we recommend that the board transmit a favorable recommendation of the historic designation report to the planning board and the city commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. Any questions?
Will this make any effect or have any effect on the dredging that's planned as part of the GO bond from 2017? The Collins Canal would be dredged for the first time since it was built. I want to make sure that that's not a problem. And the other question that I have, is there a way of adding something to the designation that we could turn around and say that no vessels that use fossil fuel can be used between Publix at Michigan and Lake Pancoast? That way it becomes more of a place for boarders and kayakers and whatnot. We're replacing a pedestrian bridge right now because of all of the jet skis that fly through there and throw all the salt water up on it, and the bridge has been closed since December, and maybe it might be reopened in August. We need to make sure that those types of things don't happen. It protects the water, and I think this would be the ideal place to make that recommendation.
And I can respond to that. I don't think the board has the authority to impose that sort of condition on the Collins Canal. You may consider transmitting a recommendation to the City Commission that the Commission look at how to limit traffic through vessel traffic through the Collins Canal. But I think that would need some further study.
I live on the Collins Canal, and they come flying through right. That water, yeah. Flying over the seawall. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah,
I have a question towards that. It, just in case we do a letter to commission, because I don't live up there and I'm not as familiar. I know you're talking about the jet skis and the spray, but I do know from Publix, I often see people offloading and unloading groceries. Are they only going to the bay, or are they ever? Because those are motorized.
They go back to their boats.
They're only going back to the boats in the bay. I'm with you. I just want to make sure that none of them are going the other direction.
Can I participate in the discussion just a little? Just as far as the dinghies, there's actually like a floating dock, and there's a place for those boaters to get off and enter the public. So it's not like just they threw it together. And I was actually thinking that that might be another place, an opportunity for signage about the historic Collins Canal, where the boaters come on and off. Most of the boaters do go back out to their liveaboards out in the bay where they're moored on buoys, but I don't think there's any legal restriction at the present to prevent them from going over towards the Indian Creek. But I understand it's a good management objective, but it's kind of putting the cart before the horse and might sort of confuse the issue, that this is just a historic designation. We recognize that this is an important historic resource. It's the oldest man-made structure in the city, and it tells a great story. In fact, canals in the United States are recognized. There's national parks, the CNO Canal. In Richmond, Virginia, there's a historic canal waterfront that George Washington designed. In fact, our founding father is connected to our original canal. And so it even tells the story of pre-auto transportation. And you know what? Even automobile transportation, because the fill, as we know, that they dug from the canal created Dade Boulevard. Dade Boulevard, the closest place it comes to the beach is where? 23rd Street, where they built the bridge. Where was the Roney Plaza? Because of the canal, because of where the bridge was, because the people that would get off of the causeway that came only a year after the canal at Belle Isle, they drive Dade Boulevard, and where would the closest beach for them be? 23rd Street. That's why, and the Coney Island vibe. Coney Island back then was different than it is today, too, I'll bet. But to have a wide promenade where people could put on nice clothes and have all kinds of entertainment and accommodations, yeah, that was what they were going for. This canal really tells so much. And as far as the dredging, I saw dredgers out there like a year ago. I thought they already did the work, but I'm hoping that if this had a designation, that if there's plans for significant work like dredging, that they would come before the board, that we would have some input, maybe not necessarily to approve or deny, but to say, you know, when you're dredging the bottom of a waterway, you might come up with historically significant artifacts. Maybe there ought to be somebody whose their job is to make sure that no history is lost in the dredging of the bottom. Now, I think, in preparation for the other item about the public parks, I looked at the city's comprehensive land use plan about parks and open spaces. It didn't say anything, so I didn't. But it does about this one. In fact, the first goal of the city's comprehensive land use plan for parks and recreational open spaces, policy 1.1.2 is the city shall identify and program opportunities to improve the Collins Canal as a pedestrian linear park and boating waterway through the proposed City Center Historic Village Redevelopment Area Program. This accomplishes one of the objectives of the city's comprehensive land use plan, and I think that this does can lead to funding opportunities. Our community designated this as a historically significant canal. State of Florida, United States government, will you help us with studies or signage or maybe planning a non-motorized recreational waterway management plan, you know? So I think that all this does is it opens up opportunities by giving it the recognition that it deserves so we can learn from it and love it.
Okay, thank you for that. Before we have a motion, I do need to open it up to the public. Any members on Zoom, raise your hand. If you're in chambers, please come forward. Matthew? I don't see anyone on Zoom. No. I mean, there are people, but not wishing to comment.
Good morning. Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. First, I want to thank Stuart, because I believe this was your idea to to initiate the designation. So thank you for your vision on this, and Jake and the rest of the staff for their very thorough and informative designation report. We support the designation of this and sending to the planning board and the city commission. It, as Stuart said, it's the oldest surviving man-made structure, and the story that it tells of the founding and development of our city is really important. So thank you, and we hope that you send us on its way. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. I see no other members of the public wishing to comment. We can close the public hearing.
Okay. I just wanted to address, we all got a letter or email from the Palmview Neighborhood Association, and one of the recommendations was to make the promenade more walkable friendly and have signage to talk about it. It's already walkable friendly, and the Collins Park Neighborhood Association has four signs along the canal, talking about the canal, talking about the history of the canal and all that. So it's already there, but I just wanted to go on record of making sure that people do realize that that is the case. Thank you.
Just one minor correction to the designation report. If you go to page 11 of 28, the caption of the picture where it says photograph of the Collins Farm right, Collins Canal lower left. On the right was Thomas Pancoast House. The farm was on the left, on the west coast, on the west shore of the Indian Creek. So the Collins Farm is actually the left side of the picture where you see all those rows of crops.
Good catch. You're correct.
And then also at the bottom of the page, there's the last sentence, there's a word missing. It's the arduous task of clearing the land and subsequent blank was performed by its subsequent work, I guess you want to put in there. But I also have a question. If you first want to substantiate that, because if the canal was built mostly by dredging equipment, I know that a lot of the workers from the Bahamas came and cleared mangroves when they cleared the shorelines, but the canal itself, if it was dug by dredging machines, did it really have a lot of, laborers?
Yes.
Yeah,
there were many laborers. A lot came from the Bahamas. A lot came from Georgia. We were actually able to find a good amount of information. But clearing the land was a significant task that was done by hand. So think about, not even just the dredging, but clearing it to prepare for the dredging was a significant, arduous task. It was a mangrove swamp, very inhospitable, which I think is, part of the reason why a lot of, Bahamian workers were very successful as the workforce, because they were used to some of that in their own climate and used to the heat and everything that brought. So I know we owe a debt of gratitude in the entire county. I know where I live in Coconut Grove. A lot of the city was built on what was mostly an immigrant workforce. So that's a really important part of the history as well. That's where I
live right now, right there.
Amazing. Any further discussion? Again, this would be a motion if you wish to make one for a recommendation to the mayor and city commission.
Okay, I move for a favorable recommendation.
I would second it.
Okay, all those in favor? Okay, that's a unanimous motion to recommend favorably to the Planning Board and City Commission. I don't believe we've calendared this yet for the Planning Board agenda, but it will likely be at their September meeting. So look forward to that, and we'll definitely transmit your recommendation. Thank you. So
great report. Thank you.
That is now that is all I have, I believe. I don't know, Nick, you don't have any updates today?
I do not, no.
Do any of the board members have anything, or we could do a motion to adjourn?
I'll move that we adjourn.
Okay. Everybody cool with that? Motion. Okay. Meeting adjourned. We will see you on July 11th. Is everyone for attendance in July? Does everyone who's in chambers plan to be at the July meeting? Brian, I think you were you will be.
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.